Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Michael Reed Show Podcast. Tune in weekdays from 9 on LMFM. To contact us, email now. michael@lmfm.ie.
Friday morning, the 22nd of March. Good morning. With much debate and discussion from now till 11 a.m. This is Michael Reed on LMFM. The Dáil has gone into recess for the Easter break, but it'll be a busy couple of weeks, it seems, for the members of Fine Gael. The party leader, Leo Bradker, as you know, stepped down on Wednesday. The task now is to select a new leader of the Fine Gael party, and indeed a new Taoiseach for that matter. Members will spend the next couple of weeks making up their minds. The choice, it seems, is simple. Simon or Simon. Let's speak to local Fine Gael TD, Fergus O'Dowd, and he's morning, with Michael. Us in studio. A very good morning to you. Thanks for coming in. It is a simple choice at this stage.
It is. Well, it's open to anybody. Yeah. You have to be a member of the Dáil to put their name forward. You need six people to sign that. They can be TDs, senators or MEPs. And that's it, really. So I think Simon has a huge majority now within the parliamentary party. And the voting, when it comes, if it were to be a vote, that's 65% of the vote. And then the party members, 20,000, they have the balance. So it's a democratic process. Everybody can consider going. And the good news is, Michael, should you be tempted to run, you can nominate more than one candidate, but not more than two.
Okay.
So you could back two horses if there was a race.
Oh, you can. Okay.
You can actually.
Okay. And will you be supporting Simon Harris?
Of course. I've already said that to him. Absolutely. Yes. No, absolutely. Is it clear? Look, I suppose I just want to say that I was a great supporter of Leo's. I regret very much that he's gone. I genuinely do. But he's made his decision. And I think, we've got to live with that. We've got to fight this election. Mm. In County Louth, we have a lot of people standing for election to make sure they get in. So, look, it's, you know, the more things change, the more they are the same in a way. They're still the same business. We've got to sell ourselves to the people. We've got to ensure that we get a clear message. Obviously, there will be changes, I presume, in terms of policies. I don't know exactly what Simon has in mind, but certainly I've spoken to myself personally about a few issues, and he said he would certainly take them on board. And, you know, that's life, you know. Mm. Yep. So as they say, I think it's, I'm not sure it's Shakespeare, one of your people will tell me, but was it Milton or somebody? Right. The old order changes and yielded place to new. Okay. And God fulfills himself in many ways. So
that's okay. Yep, no, absolutely. Thanks for that nice quote. But what about the old king who is now dead, before we talk about the new king?
The king is dead. Long live the king. Yeah. But we have a new king now. We will have, and that's politics.
But Leo Varadkar's announcement seemed to come as a bolt out of the blue.
Absolutely. We heard, I was actually in the Dáil that morning. I went up early I had an appointment in the gym, Michael, believe it or not. Yeah. Strange for me, you'd say, but I did. And I did have a cup of coffee, and there was about eight of us in there, and suddenly the news came and we were just gobsmacked. It was a shock, a surprise to everybody. But that's politics. You know, that's why it's an exciting business. Mm. You never know, what the day will bring, come with the hour, then come with the man, and the man
well,
is...
What do you think of the timing of the act?
Well, I think there's a lot of analysis of that, and as Leo himself said, there's never a good time to go or to say you're going. It's always extremely difficult on the personal level, as we clearly saw from the emotion he had in that decision. But, like, you know, if he felt that it would be better, and he said it would be better if a new leader went into the election, notwithstanding the lateness of the hour.
Yeah, well, it is. That's the point, isn't it?
But the positive impact of that is that, as I said, you know, all of us, all our hands must be on deck now. It's everybody to our barricades, everybody to the doors, everybody to sell the message. You know, there's no time for anything other than, you know, getting a message out.
But you're
there.
Going into such important elections.
They're hugely important.
Without a leader.
Well, he will be. He will be elected. He will be elected. I mean, if there's no other nomination,
I understand that, but as we speak today, two months out from the election, Fine Gael is without a leader.
But we will have a leader. Mm. It's a democratic process, so we will have a leader if there's only one nominee on Monday. I'm not sure what time is it, 12 or 1 o'clock. Mm. So we'll definitely have a leader then if he is the only nominee. Mm. And then, obviously, he becomes Taoiseach then because the Taoiseach stays in office until the Dáil reconvenes. And then the Dáil reconvenes, Leo stands up and he says, I'm going to tender my resignation to the Taoiseach. He'll go off to the park. Then he will resign. And then he'll come back and there'll be a vote then as to who the new Taoiseach will be. So every member of the Dáil has a vote in that. Mm-hmm. And obviously there'll be different candidates. And Simon Harris will be the Fine Gael nominee for Taoiseach, and we presume that we'll have Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and other people to support. But, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So then that person then, we're presuming Simon, goes to the park. Then he comes back. He says, so as he leaves, then he has the majority of Dáil. He's going to form the Uachtaráin that he has been elected Taoiseach. Get his seal of office. He said, I'll be back at 6 o'clock, whatever time it'll be, with my cabinet.
Okay.
And this is the time the sweating starts. But not for me, Michael.
No, that's
so everybody sits. Yeah. And it's really fun when you're not involved.
Yeah.
But you sit back and everybody looks, well, Jesus, is he coming back or what's happening? And then, you know, the Taoiseach's coming in at 6 o'clock and everybody's there about 5:45. Who's here? Who's not here?
Absolutely. Of course,
and there always comes a red face at the last minute. Say, jeepers, he got the bullet. Or whatever. You know, that's the game in every party.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the exciting part. Yeah. Nobody knows. And then the other part, just to let you know, in the House, between the Dáil and the government, the Taoiseach's offices, there's we call the bridge of size. So it's a bridge of size indeed. So it's a glass partition. Mm. 99 days out of 100. The blinds are never pulled, but on that day they're always pulled, so nobody can see who's been brought over back.
So everybody's
looking for a chink.
Okay,
so that's the fun of it, you know. So for our listeners, it really is an exciting time, regardless of who gets the job.
And that's most likely the way it will. As you say, nobody can say with any certainty that Simon Harris is going to be elected Taoiseach by the Dáil. But it is that the right and proper way at this moment in time? The opposition obviously says no, it's
of
not
course,
that
yeah.
the instead of the Taoiseach going to the Oireachtas and resigning, he should be dissolving the Dáil.
But that's the point. But the reality is on that very issue, we're preparing for a budget. There is an election taking place. Everybody in this country will have two votes. In what is it, 11, 10 weeks' time? How long is it now? I think the 7th of June, as far as I know. So they will have a vote. Hmm. And that would, whatever that result, it would clearly have an impact. So if you're angry, if you're happy, you vote the other way. Hmm. So that's democracy. But the mandate,
certain that it's going to be a bad poll or two bad polls for Fine Gael,
which is going to be
a very bad start for Simon Harris if he is the new leader of the
party. But let's wait till we see what happens. You know, I appreciate a lot of people might predict that, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. you know, what will happen? Well, that the people will see Simon now. Mm. He'll make his case to the people. I agree absolutely. He's a very short period to do that. But I think it'll bring determination and purpose and unity to the party. Because, look, guys, this is it. It's live or die now. We've got to
Well, it was a disastrous referendum for the government parties. For the government parties. But
for Sinn Féin, because they support also for the Labour Party.
Yep, yep,
but the reality is, all of us politicians got it wrong. We didn't get the mood of the people right. And I think it was more about the wording and about the worries. There wasn't clarity, you know, on what a durable relationship was. Mm. And there were people who had serious and significant personal issues, you know. And, I don't have to explain it here to you. And I know you understand that.
And when it comes to how it was framed, how it was worded and how it was explained.
Exactly.
That really falls at the government's door.
Of course it does. Now, it does, of course, Michael,
Now, and that was brutal. That was just...
It was completely out of touch. It was completely...
Nobody understood it. And anybody who did understand it were complaining because they couldn't understand what a durable relationship was. So really, it was cack-handed.
Yeah, but against that, Michael, against that too, you have something like, I think the number is about 400,000 people living in relationships that are durable in the context that they're living together.
No, I know.
Michael,
but
make this point. Not by way of explanation. If you are living and you have children and you're not married with your partner, that is a durable relationship. Mm. That isn't recognised in the same way legally as a marriage is.
No.
Now, people say, well, why didn't they get married? Yeah. Well, that's their choice. Maybe they have been married already.
Yeah, but the Constitution the Constitution doesn't recognise that.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
Yeah,
and the other problem is, of course, that as a result of the government's failure, a woman's constitutional role in this country is in the home. And a lot of people have a real problem with that, and that remains. Is that the sword that Leo Varadkar fell on, do you think?
Well, I think it's certainly, I don't know personally, because I did speak to him after he made his announcement, but I mean, I'm sure he'll talk about that in due time. But the fact is, if there had to be a simple deletion of the words or the addition of, you know, persons rather than women, it would mean that a man in the home, and there are lots of males who are home keepers now while the female is working. Look, it's history now in that it failed. If it ever happens again, and we have to get it right, it has to be a due process, full consultation. And I think one of the problems was probably we needed a better raucous debate on it. And the other point was, I think, that the Attorney General's advice was certainly not published. Now, it never is published, but it was leaked. And that confused everybody because we were never told by any minister what the Attorney General said. So you can't buy a pig in a poke. And that's what the people are saying.
And you can't undo time. You can't talk about these things retrospectively.
But you
can talk about where we are now, which is that there's been no change. The people, I think, to a large degree, will feel let down by that and will wonder why the government failed. And that then on top of many of the other issues in the country, the number one issue in the country, we're told from the polls, is immigration.
You stood up in the
Dáil saying bad minister, bad government.
Absolutely.
Totally critical. A lot of people are I would imagine most people in the country are critical for different reasons.
Yes, absolutely.
Of the government's policies.
Because vulnerable people who are entitled to be treated with due process are being abused by this process because there's anger and resentment to them, which is absolutely wrong. And when you take a hotel away from a town and the people that are blamed for that, the ministers...
Bad government.
Not acceptable.
Bad minister, bad government. Yeah. And that's what people... When you're hearing it from the Fine Gael backbenches, you can imagine how it resonates outside. Housing, 24,000.
Just a bit of information on immigration.
Okay, sure,
One of the issues, I have a number of questions. I was just telling Maggie before I came and got answered this week. And one of them is that there are over 300 contracts made with contractors for provisional spaces have been dissolved before their time for whatever reason, I don't know. So there's all sorts of things going on. He won't tell us. and this is the lack of transparency, you know, about people who may have lost a contract and be taken off them, who they are, what was the issue, because people are entitled to know what happened. But at the end of the day, we have an obligation to house them appropriately. And what was wrong with this? And that's what's wrong.
But there's so much wrong with it. I mean, there's people who are looking at immigrants as a license to print money. And there's the rest of us looking at immigrants sleeping on the streets, ending up very sick with diseases. It's crazy stuff. But then housing and so on.
I raised it with him again this week. You might play my sound if you get it out. He did acknowledge that it was wrong. He did acknowledge that, and he says he's going to change it on Wednesday. Now, there's no sitting day on Wednesday.
Yeah, I know.
But we'll run a microscope everything he says. But I mean, the point is, look, I think we will change the policy, but it's too late for drawdown.
It's too late.
And we need the money now to invest in our infrastructure.
But when people go to vote, that is what they're going to vote on.
I know that, yeah.
I mean, by any measure, I think it's hard to imagine that Fine Gael won't lose seats. Won't be punished.
To put it a different way. When you put a cake in the oven, it's like people going for an election. You have a different mix every time, and the mix that's in there, some of it hasn't been put in right, that's for sure.
Right.
And it might very well get burned, or might get roasted.
Yeah.
But at the same time, maybe it might be a bit okay. You don't know. Yeah. So, like, I mean, if that's a good analogy, maybe it's not.
My sense is you're going to get a roasting.
Fair enough.
And that's
democracy.
That comes back to that question about is it fair on Simon Harris to take over at a time when the party is going to be annihilated?
Well, I don't think we're going to be annihilated, Michael, to be quite honest. I mean, in fact, if you look at the polls, what they're saying is that if you were to add Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together, we're well ahead of everybody else, that we'd have to work together to do that. And there are other options for coalition, particularly for Fianna Fáil. But we said we're not going in with some of those, including we won't go in with them right now. Mm. So the situation is, notwithstanding everything, and I'd be the first to say that I... say three elections ago, I got thousands of votes that I don't get today. And the reason I don't get them is because they're not angry with me personally, but they're unhappy with issues that affected them that the government did. And when you're in government for 13 years or whatever, they all add up. Mm. You know, so the people need this change. And I'm not sure what Simon is going to do with his burnt bench, but you read the papers yourself on that one. But like, I mean, you know,
who would you be watching out for?
Well, I'd be watching out for, you know, I just think policy issues for me are important. Mm.
No, personnel though.
Tell you, Michael.
Okay.
I might say something nice about the wrong person.
Okay. But you're holding your stump.
Well, I hope that Helen gets back in. She's been very good to Drogheda. Header. It's been very good to Drogheda. Simon has been particularly good to Drogheda. We have Diffie, DKIT. We have the new apprentice centre. You know, Simon Harris has done an awful lot for Drogheda, actually, believe it or not. There's 400 apprentices per annum being trained here in Drogheda, and skills that weren't in our country up to date. Mm. So, like, I mean, things are changing, but we've got to persuade people through your good radio how good we are.
Okay, well, and probably few... as good as Simon Harris at communicating any message. He is a very good communicator. Excellent. He's a very slick, polished type of politician, sticks to a point, gets that point across, repeats it, and we all remember it. As I think we've seen over the course of the last 24 hours in the interviews that he's given. But what about the substance to it? Because there are questions about his record, things like the National Children's Hospital, the overrun on the budget there, total mismanagement, the issue with scoliosis, and indeed cervical check, which nearly brought the last government down.
Sure. Well, there'll always be very serious issues like that. Excuse me. And look, he can answer those questions. Obviously, that's his job. He was minister and he can explain that to you. Like, the detail of that, I didn't research for today, but do I want a children's hospital? I do. Is it going to be fantastic? It is. Mm. It's going to open, I understand, next year.
Is it going to cost far too much money?
It may. I accept that too, Michael. I'm not disagreeing with you on that. And I mean, that's one of the issues with public contracts. Mm. And you saw what happened in a very small way with Narrow Water Bridge. Mm.
But that's why we elect people.
No, that is why we elect people to... I don't disagree, Michael. Yeah. But the point is, you know, like the and I don't know the detail of it, but the type of contract, the people who gave the contract, I'm talking about the boards and all of that, I didn't do due diligence on that. But the issues are, even if you provide the money, and I'm not talking about that hospital, it doesn't mean the money isn't going to be spent properly, you know, and that's the problem. Mm-hmm. So the question is, you know, accountability for how it happens and preparation for that, and the management and financial skills, obviously, they weren't applied appropriately. Okay. That's a fact.
Simon Harris obviously gets your vote, and you believe that he will be a good party leader and a good Taoiseach. And we'll ask our listeners to share in that sentiment with
Give
you.
Him week. Give him a week.
Otherwise, if they
Jesus, Mike, you can't shoot him on the first day. He's not even in the job yet.
Well, I'm not sure about that either. But it's a great opportunity, actually, for Fine Gael publicity, isn't it, over the course of the couple of weeks.
Well, here I am again, Michael. Yes.
Well, I think we're going to have a 2-week Fine Gael Ordesh, more or less.
Why
absolutely.
Not?
All right. Thank you indeed. Thanks very much for coming into us this morning. Fine Gael TD for Louth and East Meath, Fergus O'Dowd. We'd love to hear from you. 0419832000 is our telephone number. Text or WhatsApp 0861800658. Email michael@lmfm.ie.
Michael Reed on LMFM.
Tom in Navan says, Michael, I wish Simon Harris well. I really do. I also don't envy him. He's getting the job so easy simply because nobody else, not even the other Simon who really wanted it, nobody wants it. It's a joke, really. All hail the new captain of the Titanic, says Tom. Thank you very much indeed for that. Mary in touch with us about the referendum, saying it didn't state that children born from previous relationships that weren't married were recognised, I think. Thanks for that. We'd Gordon in touch, and he says it says a lot about the calibre of people in the party that they couldn't run away from the honour of becoming leader fast enough, pushing Harris into the limelight, whether he wanted it or not. But then, who wants to take over as captain of the Titanic? They know Fine Gael are going to get annihilated at the polls, as the rats who already fled the ship have demonstrated, and are happy to put him up as a sacrificial lamb while the party enters the same hibernation period as post-2011 Fianna Fáil. And Harris is more than likely happy to have party leader on his CV for when he inevitably leaves to go to a cushy board position to bolster his TD's pension. He's already been called the TikTok Taoiseach because of his love of social media. Very apt, because his tenure will be about the same length as one of those videos. Thanks very much for your comment, Gordon. A lot of thought went into that. Much appreciate you sending it to us. Sean, thanks for your message too. He says, it must stick in the craw of Fianna Fáil TDs to have to march into the Dáil and vote in another Fine Gael member as Taoiseach, especially when the new Taoiseach could be described as a youngster. I won't read out what Sean says, but he says, how can Fine Gael state that they have a mandate to govern even though they just hold 22% of Dáil seats? Thanks for that, Sean. You are right, of course. Simon Harris will become the youngest Taoiseach ever in this country, 37 years of age. And I think, as you very well know, Sean, I'm sure, Fine Gael say they have a mandate because of the support and partnership that they have with Fianna Fáil and the Green Parties, and that the combined number of seats gives them the majority, and that is what the people voted for. Ellen, thank you. I was listening to Mary Lou MacDonald on The Tonight Show on Virgin Media yesterday, Ellen tells us. And Ellen says, Mary Lou MacDonald is so two-faced. She went along with the government I take it that's on the referendum that you mean, Ellen. And Ellen says she can't wait to get to the end of the week or the 2 weeks and all of the waffle that is going to go on about our new Taoiseach and indeed the contest or the coronation, as it is probably more aptly put. Thanks, Ellen. Thanks, everybody who's been in touch. 0419832000 if you want to ring us, text or WhatsApp. 086-1800-658. Email michael@lmfm.ie.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Now, we'll be speaking to Simon Harris at 10 o'clock this morning. If you want to hear from the incoming Taoiseach ahead of the coronation, as I say, that will just be after the headlines at 10 o'clock this morning. But attention now on the Labour Party, which is holding its conference in the Helix today. Senator Mark Wall joins us, and a very good morning to you, and thanks for joining us on the programme this morning. This is an opportunity for your party to prepare for the local and European elections. How bad are you expecting them to be?
Well, we're not expecting them to be bad at all, Michael, because we have some great candidates like Emma Cutcliffe, Michelle Hall, Pio Smith.
Ah, you're joking me. Ah, don't start naming people. No, you're going to come on and start electioneering.
You know the quality of candidates. Oh,
yeah. We don't need a list of them now. Yeah, but I mean, that's the kind of cheap shot that people have got fed up with the Labour Party, isn't it?
No, it's not, Michael, because these people are actually working on the ground, the people I've mentioned, in fairness, and I think people in those areas know the work that they're doing on the ground.
Yeah,
and that's what we're presenting. But
when I ask you a question about the terrible demise of your party, you start naming candidates in the hope of promoting them. That's a bit of a cheap shot, is it not?
It's not, Michael, because we're very realist in the Labour Party. We know where we are in the polls, but we have the people on the ground, and I'm very proud of the people on the ground. The Labour Party are as well,
yeah,
because they are the people that will work to get us back to, you know, in the polls, and that's what we have. And you know, when I get asked that question, I'm very familiar with what's happening on the ground myself. Mm. I'm very familiar with those people, and those people will make the party rise in the polls.
And have you any idea what they or your party stands for anymore?
Absolutely, Michael. I'm a very proud member of the party. I've been in it for 25 years. And I'm very, very proud of what the Labour Party stands for. We stand for working people. Indeed, working people are caught what I would call the triple bind at the moment. Mm. You know, they're fighting for their children. Every day I get calls in relation to school places, in relation to assessment of need. Mm. They're fighting for their parents in relation to housing need. They're fighting for themselves in this cost of living crisis. And that's what the Labour Party does well.
Are you sure that's not just what you say when you're going into an election?
It's not, Michael. It's something that I deal with every day. I'm about to go into my own clinic today, where I've come across 25 people who booked in to meet me today on their issues. Mm. And that's the issues that I deal with every day. And those people that I've mentioned, including RTD for the area, PO, Jed Nash, that's what people do, in the Labour Party.
Okay, but I was looking at the motions. There's over 80 motions that will be debated by the Labour Party. Nothing on water. Have you given up on trying to charge people for water?
No, we're not, Michael. We're not giving up on anything for anybody, in fairness. You know, in fairness, the motions come through our party lines and branches and all that stuff. If there's not one on water there, then that didn't come in for our branches. But we discuss, as you said,
what does that mean? The Labour Party will charge people for water?
No, the Labour Party are not in government, as you know, Michael. So what we will do is that when we present our manifesto for the next elections, which could be any day now, as we know, we'll definitely be.
But when local candidates go out and knock on doors, people will say to them, "You tried to charge us for water. Are you going to do that now? If in government."
There is no charge for water at the moment, Michael, as we know. So we'll have to sit down and we'll have to do a manifesto in relation to local elections.
So the Labour Party doesn't really have a position on water. I was looking at the motions, over 80 motions. Nothing on free third level education. Has the Labour Party changed its mind on that?
Again, Michael, you're asking about ones that we don't have down. What we have down is 90 motions.
No, but Rory Quinn was going to make third-level education free for everybody, and everybody went out and voted for Labour because of that, who had an interest in education. And then Pat Rabbit said, that's just what you say going into an election. You make things up.
Well, Michael, we have, as I said, a manifesto for coming up for our local and indeed our general elections. We'll be putting all that. We're very happy with the education. We want to invest in education. We see it as a platform for many of the people who unfortunately are leaving this country. 21,000 people left this country, young people that we want to get back into this country. And education is one of the platforms that we believe that they should be pursuing, and that's something that we will have in our manifesto, and we will go before the people, as we always have done in the Labour Party, with that, and that will happen in the coming weeks.
You're going to lose a lot of TDs going into the next general election. Do you believe that there'll be any seats gained in the local elections?
Yes, we have some very good candidates. I've named them, and you know, you're not going to allow me to name them again, but we have some very good candidates in your area. We have some new candidates in your area as well. And we also have candidates, new candidates, very powerful candidates, community candidates, where we're vested in communities right throughout the country. So I'm expecting some gains for the Labour Party. It will be a difficult election. We're very much aware of that because we're on the ground, Michael. But we are very happy that we have the candidates. We have over 100 candidates elected at this stage. We will be adding more. And the Labour Party will go out and present themselves as they always have to the electorate.
Why would somebody vote Labour instead of the Social Democrats, do you think?
Well, I think there's a history of the Labour Party working on the ground. You know, we have the people that have been working for a long period of time. We have a tradition of work. We have a tradition of looking after people. And I always say that when people are in trouble, the first person that they're going to search out for is their local Labour Party candidate or their local party councillor or public representative. That's been my experience of it. And I think that's an experience that people in Loudonmead would have as well. So I think that's what happens when you're in trouble. The person that you go seeking is the Labour Party. And I think that's the tradition and history we have over the Social Democrats, and I think that will continue.
There's very little between the two parties, though, philosophically, is there?
Well, you know, I haven't done much research in relation to the Social Democrats. I know what the Labour Party stands for, but I think in time the parties will look at one again, but at the moment we will present ourselves as the Labour Party, as we've always done, and we'll put ourselves in front of the electorate, as I said, as the Labour Party.
OK, we've seen the Taoiseach announced this week that he's stepping down as Taoiseach and leader of Fine Gael. That follows on from a terrible referendum. Terrible referendum as well for the Labour Party as well, or any of the parties that supported the proposals. If the Labour Party is annihilated in the local elections, will Ivana Bakic leadership come into question?
Well, I don't see ourselves being annihilated in the next local elections, Michael, and that's what I've said to you. We present ourselves with some very good candidates, and we'll get some gains, some seats in some places. You know, we are aware of what's out there, and we will present ourselves, but we are not expecting to be annihilated in the forthcoming local elections by no means whatsoever, because we have the candidates on the ground who are doing the work, and I think they'll be rewarded for that work by the electorate come June of this year.
But there must be disappointment in the party, is there not, at how the election of a new leader in Ivana Bakic hasn't resulted in any gains in the polls to speak of for Labour?
Well, at this stage, everyone is behind Ivana in relation to what we need to do in the Labour Party. We have a conference this weekend where we'll present ourselves, as you said, with over 90 motions. And I think once people listen to what the Labour Party have to say under Ivana Bakic, then they will consider voting for the Labour Party once again, as they've done in the past. And that's why we want to get out. That's why we're knocking doors with our candidates in Loud and Mead and elsewhere, because we want to spread the Labour message. We want to get out. We want to show this government for what they are. They've forgotten about working people. And that's what we will do over the weekend, and that's what we will do in the coming weeks.
Do you believe that there will be an election, a general election? Is the Labour Party on election footing?
The Labour Party is very much on election footing. I think the posters are ordered. I have my own in the back garden ready to go, Michael. And as soon as that election is called, and the sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned, then the Labour Party will be on a definite election footing. But as it stands, we are ready for an election. We've called for an election, and we believe an election needs to happen now.
OK, we'll leave it there for the moment. Thank you indeed for joining us today. That's Labour Party Senator Mark Wall. As I mentioned earlier on, we'll be hearing from Simon Harris after the headlines at 10. He's going to be the next Taoiseach by all accounts. But that's not how it should happen, according to some opposition TDs.
You see, the bit that you don't point out is that when we face this ever-worsening homelessness and housing crisis, when we face the fact that The house prices and rents in this country now mean the most basic thing people need to operate in our society, an affordable roof over their head, is out of the reach of the vast majority of working people. When you look at the chronic state of our health service, when you look at the understaffing and resourcing of special needs, our failure to vindicate the rights of people with disabilities and carers, when you look at all that hardship and all that suffering, the other side of the coin is record profits for the corporations. Vulture funds and wealth asset management companies making a fortune. Property developers and property speculators profiteering off the back of other people's misery. That is the other side of the story, and that is the legacy of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael priorities. Always privileging the profits and the interests of those at the top, while hundreds of thousands of young and working people and vulnerable people suffer.
Thank you.
That's the reality. And that is why the people, not Fine Gael, should now decide who leads the next government, because those problems are too urgent and pressing to be left up to the people who have failed our society.
And that was Richard Boyd Barrett. Our text number 086 1800 658.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Now, some of the comments coming to us this morning. Pat in Drumconrat says the whole lot of them in the Dáil are delighted with this little chair moving exercise. The referendum result has been sidelined. It doesn't matter who gets into government or onto opposition seats. They all still have their seats, so they all win. After all, it's the civil servants who really do the job, the permanent government, I think they call them, don't they, Pat? Thanks very much for your text. Another text that comes from Jerome O'Brien, who says Fergus O'Dowd was spouting on about the new Taoiseach being democratically elected. And Jerome says, I might be wrong, but with a population of over more than 5 million, how is a democratic if it's just members of Fine Gael who get to vote on who will take up the position? Tom was in touch wondering if Fergus O'Dowd was saying let them eat cake. That was lost on me, Tom, but thanks for your message. John was in touch and he says, good morning, Michael. Can you please confirm, did Mark Wall of the Labour Party just say that the party is in favour of water charges? He didn't. I think I took it to mean that from what the senator said was that they, I don't have a policy on water anymore, or if there was, it wasn't offered to us by the senator when I asked him about it. I don't think he said either way, but I'm not sure if that's reflective of the Labour Party's position or what the party position is. Anyway, as you know, Simon Harris is the Taoiseach in waiting. The coronation, I think, will take place on the 5th of April, unless something happens that will come as a bolt out of the blue before Monday. He's been speaking to reporters this morning, including LMFM's Ruth O'Connell.
The past couple of days have been quite a whirlwind, if we're being honest with each other. I don't think when anybody got out of bed and came into work this week that they expected the Taoiseach of the country, the leader of our party, Leo Varadkar, to make the decision that he did. I was in the room with Mr. McEntee when he told us, and I don't think we'll ever forget that sense of collective shock and surprise. The air just went out of the room. And I want to join with others in thanking Leo Varadkar for his leadership, of our party for 7 years, during which almost all of that time he's either been the Taoiseach or the Tánaiste of our country, and indeed for ministries that he held in advance of being Taoiseach and Tánaiste as well. I want to thank him for how he's represented our country at home and abroad. And I must say, I was so proud, not just as a colleague of his, but as a citizen of Ireland, so proud to listen to him, to watch him last week in the United States of America, espousing values that aren't just Irish values, but I think our values founded in human rights and decency, in terms of calling for a cessation of violence in the Middle East, and for saying that in the Oval Office, and for having the President of the United States say the words, I agree. That tells you the ability at statecraft and the incredible talent they have, and I thank him for that. Of course, in politics, once there's a vacancy, it quickly moves to who's going to fill that vacancy, and I am overwhelmed and honoured by the level of support that I've received from so many colleagues, including Helen, over the last number of hours, whether they were ministers, ministers of state, TDs, senators, MEPs, councillors, council candidates, grassroots members. To each and every one of them, I want to thank them. I'm humbled, and my commitment to them and my commitment to the people of this country, if given the honour of serving, is that I will give this my all, that I will work day and night. I believe politics is about delivery, it's about people. Sometimes politics in Ireland has gotten a bit too presidential, a bit too personal. Politics is about actually getting things done for people. In many ways, I'm an accidental politician. I ended up in politics when my brother was born with autism, and I started with a moody teenager and started campaigning in Wicklow saying there has to be a better way of providing educational supports for people with autism. I know how politics can deliver for people, and if given the honour of serving, I want to take that can-do approach to getting things done, to renewing our party, to injecting a level of energy, and to anybody who thinks this party is tired, to anyone who thinks this party lacks energy, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Are you ruling out now an election?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For the end of this year, and will the government go full term?
So there's one contest I'm involved in currently, and that is to be the leader of the Fine Gael party, which I'm not currently. And I'm conscious that nominations are still open and that process needs to play itself out in the coming hours, and I'm engaging with members, councillors, cities, senators, colleagues here today and indeed in other locations today, and listening to people, and let's see how that process goes in the coming hours and days. If given the opportunity to serve as Fine Gael leader, I will remain committed to the programme for government. I've heard the leaders of the other parties outline their support for the programme for government. This government was never one about personalities or individuals. This is a government about policy, and that shared policy is outlined in the programme for government. So, yes, if given the opportunity to serve, I remain fully committed to implementing the programme for government and to working with colleagues in Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Green Party to deliver for the people of this country.
See, you're ruling out.
I'm ruling out
an election before the end of the year.
I'm certainly not ruling anything in a race, but it's not my priority at the moment. Isn't anything about elections. My priority was the election of the leader of Fine Gael. My priority then, should I be given the opportunity to serve, is to work with Fianna Fáil and the Green Party to deliver on the programme for government. And certainly a general election is not in any manner or means on my mind. The people of this country want us to get on with their business and deliver for them.
We'll go to Brian, then Laura, and then Harry. Thanks,
Minister. Two questions. How would you describe yourself ideologically? And secondly, what sort of advice did Phil Hogan give you?
Well, Phil, I read the mail. Phil is a friend of mine, he's a colleague of mine. I talk to lots of friends and colleagues, but I think you've given maybe all of us a little bit too much credit in one level. I don't think anybody saw, certainly I didn't see, a vacancy arising in the leadership of Fine Gael. And I just can't speak for Phil, but I was certainly stunned and shocked when it did arise in the manner which it arose. But Phil Hogan has played a major role in Irish and European politics. He's somebody I consider a friend and a colleague. And I talk to him as I talk to many people.
He's a famous arm twister. I mean, did you learn much from him?
Did I learn much from him? I think you can learn lots from Phil, but you can learn lots from many people. I like to be a politician, and I hope colleagues know me to be one that listens. listening is very important in politics. We do a lot of talking. Actually being willing to listen, being willing to take advice, being willing to take counsel, and being willing to listen and take counsel from a wide range of people, including people who have sought and secured political office like Phil. But in terms of anything to do with arm twisting, I think yesterday I was just really genuinely humbled and overwhelmed by the number of people within the parliamentary party who offered me their support, and outside the parliamentary party, grassroots members, council candidates and others. I don't believe in ideological labels. I'm committed to the values of the Fine Gael party. Fine Gael party is a party that has proudly been Christian democratic. It's a party, though, that I think in Ireland labels are often misrepresented. This is a party that, for me, is about equality of opportunity. That is how I define my vision and approach. It's the approach I've tried to bring to ministries that I've held, most particularly the one that I've had the honour of establishing from scratch, making sure that, and I've said this thousands of times, just not as many of you are listening then, I said it a thousand of times across the country, that no matter who you are, where you come from, what your mother or father did before you, I want everyone in this country to be able to reach their full potential. And that's the approach I want to take.
Okay.
That's Simon Harris speaking to reporters this morning, including Ruth O'Connell of LMFM. We try to return to that press briefing later in the programme today. But before we go to the break, let me give you another comment that has come to us by email from Liam in Navan. And he says, Michael, what are we really doing? We're accepting a member of a government that has failed on most, if not all, of their policies. And let's not forget a Taoiseach's salary and a Taoiseach's pension. Jobs for the boys again, says Liam in Navan. Well, thanks for that, Liam. Of course, the government says it is fulfilling its promises and has a lot of work to do before it ends its term of office and wants to continue with the programme for government. And that is one of the questions, I suppose, that opposition has been asking this week. Is that what should happen, or should there be a general election? But it seems as though it's going to go ahead as planned. And the new Taoiseach will be Simon Harris, who you've just been listening to. Interesting. I think we heard over the last 24 hours most of the things that Simon Harris was saying in the statements this morning in other interviews. But interesting to hear him say, I thought, that he wouldn't rule in or rule out a general election. 0419832000, our telephone number, text or WhatsApp 0861800658, email michael@lmfm.ie.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
I'm sure you've been hearing in the bulletins about how Drew Harris, the Garda Commissioner, was in front of the Public Accounts Committee yesterday. He was speaking about how a Garda loaned a bicycle to an elderly man. His comments have led to questions from the GRA and indeed a solicitor who's been representing the Garda in question, who's been completely vindicated and is back in service. But they weren't the only questions that the Commissioner was fielding at that committee hearing yesterday. He also took questions about the gangs dealing drugs in Drogheda. And no, this was not historical.
Following the feud and all of that, the murders and all of that that happened, the daylight shootings, all of that, we are actually down 6 Gardaí, so one less Gardaí shift. And it's stated here in black and white that it's now accepted that there'll not be a Garda on the beat. Now, how is that in any way best practice? Where does community policing fit in? Here is a town that went through hell, that we begged and pleaded for additional services. And now, and bear in mind, those directly involved in that feud, the instigators, they're not behind bars, the main ones. They're still out there. But it's actually creeping back in. And I can name areas in the town where it's actually creeping back in, where there's now parents being threatened again, looking for monies. There's petrol bomb attacks, there's parents afraid of their lives, and there's open drug dealing. And yet, my question is, where are the lessons learned? Why would you withdraw guards from an area that had gone through so much, that needed particular focus, that was promised particular focus, and we're actually worse off than we were? How's that good policing?
Well, what I would point to is the success of the policing operation.
The Garda Commissioner was keen to talk about the success of the policing operation in Drogheda, but Sinn Féin's Imelda Munster was keen to talk about the problems.
But here it is, from your own people, it is now accepted that there will not be a Garda on the beat, right? We're down 6 Gardaí from we were several years ago. It's the largest town in Ireland, haven't gone through the feud. Things starting to kick off again, not in your face kick off, but they're coming back out and it's all starting again. We're 6 Garda down and your own people have said there won't be a Garda on the beat. How could you possibly stand over that?
Well, I don't pretend to stand over it. I was unaware of that and I can pursue it further. But that statement hasn't been made to me and that wasn't my understanding of the policing there. But I can pursue it further.
The Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris. The Commissioner was responding to Sinn Féin's Imelda Munster, who joins us now. And a very good morning to you, and thank you indeed for joining us. From what we heard there, it's clear you believe that we're going backwards and that the troubles we thought were behind us are bubbling under the surface.
Yeah, there's definitely, you can, you know, hear it, or you can see it, you can hear it. But it's definitely starting, and particularly, you know, if we're down Garda numbers and the focus has been removed, not removed, that's not fair to say to local Gardaí, but if they're under-resourced and ill-equipped, and obviously people are going to, I mean, there's open drug dealing, there's threats and intimidation all starting to kick off again. And if you go back to when it initially started, I mean, certainly the lack of resources was part of the main factor that allowed that criminal feud, you know, in Drogheda to develop in the first instance. And given all the focus, given everything the town has gone through, and we went through hell, to look now and see that the figures are gone back. I mean, in December 21, we had 152 guards. And then in May of last year, we had 146. And that's one guard down on each shift. And as a result of that, and this has come from, not myself, this has come from the Commissioner's own people, that there'll not be a Garda on the beat. That's just not good enough, given, you know, the entire focus, the Vivian Guerin report, the Drogheda Implementation Board, all of that. It can't be allowed to creep up again and get out of control the way it did. But what I found was, because I started the questioning asking the Commissioner about community policing and the benefits of it, and did he see it as best practice, and, you know, all of that sort of thing. And he had described the Garda Síochána Conor as an exemplar in this area. And then when I went on to say, well, hold on a second, you know, the largest town in Ireland is down guards after all we've been through. And then what was actually scarier was he said he was unaware of that. Now, that's a matter of enormous concern, you know, when it comes to dealing with gang related crimes, you know, and making sure that a situation doesn't escalate further. I mean, you have to ask. He said he'd get back to me. He'll revert to me. But you have to ask, is he across his districts? Is he across on top of resources? Is he doing his job? You know, because anytime you ask the minister, she says that's a matter for the Garda Síochána Conor. Anytime I've ever flagged it up with the minister, she just brushed it away. That's a matter for the Garda Commissioner.
Well, exactly the point.
And
that's the way it should be, because, it's dangerous when politicians start making decisions like that, because it's easy to win votes by deciding in Helen McEntee's case that she'd put, I don't know, several hundred new Gardaí into County Meath, for example. She'd be a very popular politician. So that's why there is that divide, so that the doesn't happen. But the Garda Commissioner doesn't know in one of the worst hit zones in the country. And I heard you talking about community policing with Drew Harris, and he was such a good advocate for it. He was saying not only does it work as a way of liaising with young people in whatever community it is and so on, but he also said it was a good intelligence tool, so that information would be given to the Gardaí. So here we are in the feud land of Drogheda, still shaking, reverberating from the effects of that, and no community policing. When you say no Garda on the beat, does that mean that there is no Gardaí walking the streets day or night in Drogheda?
Well, that didn't come from me. That came from a submission made by Drew Harris's own people, by the Gardaí. That's not something I made up. That's actually was handed to me in black and white as part of a submission made. But the other thing as well was when I asked him after he had said that the Garda Síochána were an exemplar in the area of community policing. And as you said, you know, the benefits of gathering information and all that sort of thing. The when you actually got into asking about the figures, whether or not they're going up year on year and the percentage per county and that, there's 670 community Gardaí in the state, but that's remained static. There's been no increase, despite him saying that they're exemplar, you know, and that's down to him. And you're right, you know, the minister, it's right that she refers it to the Garda commissioner, but when you come across what I came across yesterday, that he hasn't a notion of what's going on, that's a different kettle of fish altogether. That's scary.
And there is another question then for the minister about the number of community policing Gardaí. 670, you say, it hasn't changed. But the funding hasn't changed. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Drew Harris said that it had increased in line with inflation. But essentially, the funding is static.
That's it. Yeah, no, it hasn't. It hasn't budged. He was saying in inflation. He was bringing in some sort of management additions or whatever. But the community Gardaí haven't changed. It's remained static, despite, you know, different towns like Drogheda and cities and Dublin and all of that. They haven't prioritised the benefits of community policing, you know. And yet, when I asked him that straightforward question, he couldn't say enough good about it. But yet, the same individual, the commissioner, couldn't see the benefits of putting additional resources and additional funding in and building it up year by year. So you have to question, you know, when you actually scrape under things, you know, this separate the spiel and the nonsense from the actual facts, you know, that they were there for it to clear to be seen. It was really, really, I mean, I couldn't believe when he said he was unaware. I just thought, oh, this is, am I hearing this type of attitude, you know?
I thought the most telling question,
everything that we've gone through.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I thought the most telling question that you put to the commissioner yesterday, after everything that we've gone through, as you were just saying, was, what have we learned?
Yeah, absolutely nothing is what I took from it, you know. Now, we'll be raising it with the minister. He said that he'd get back to me on it. If he doesn't, then the next week or two I will be chasing. That's not going to be let go. You know, it's too serious and too important, and we have to make sure that we never creep back, or, you know, to the situation we were in a few years ago, and that situation is never allowed to escalate. And until they give additional resources, we've no way of managing or curtailing that until we get those additional resources. But the sneaky underhandedness of it all, you know, we have the report, the plan, all the you know, the press coverage around that, and the focus that'll be put on Drogheda. But then when you actually delve into it, we're actually less well off Garda resource-wise than we were in 2019. You know, that's the hard facts of it, and that's what's so sickening.
What can you tell us about the drug dealers in Drogheda now? How do they compare to the nutters that were shooting each other and putting everybody in the town in the line of danger?
Well, they're the next generation up, if you like. They're younger people that's doing the running for more serious ones that seem to be keeping themselves out of the picture this time. But there's no shortage of those runners who are going around doing the dealing, doing the intimidating, and the others seem to be trying to keep their noses clean. But it's exactly the same as what happened the last time. It's breeding the next generation. And if that's not cracked down on and nipped in the bud, you know, it could easily kick off again. And that's where, you know, and you hear people say, now you hear it said about every town, I'm not saying Drogheda is any exception, about, you know, all major towns and even villages being awash with certain types of drugs. And with that comes, you know, people fall into debt, and that's where it comes to the intimidation. They go to parents, threats of homes being attacked, you know, all of that sort of thing. But it's all happening as we speak. It's happening. And it's just a case of trying to nip it in the bud before it explodes the way it was allowed to explode the last time, if you like.
Okay. Thanks indeed, Melda, for joining us this morning. Imelda Munster, Sinn Féin TD for Louth and East Meath.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Yesterday, the Social Democrats asked the government to agree that its failure to provide material reception conditions to international protection applicants is unlawful, and called on the government to do something about it. The government remarkably didn't oppose this motion, so you could say, in effect, it agreed that it's in breach of the law. We'll talk about that in a moment, but it has to be said there were some choice contributions to the debate. We're going to hear from Independent TD Matty McGrath to begin with, who for some reason started off by telling the Dáil that the debate was taking place during Holy Week.
You keep, the problem is you won't stop the numbers coming in, because you sent out tweets to welcome them all from God knows where. The numbers on St. Patrick's Day, Law Fáil Party, our national patron saint, and the numbers that they reached, if I can find them here, they reached record level of asylum seekers in this country on that day, and still going. And the PR stunt in that you had, what you're doing in Brown Street, brought him out there. Minister, will you please engage with people? You haven't gone down to Ross Quay to meet the people. You haven't gone to Fermoy to meet the people. You haven't gone anywhere to meet the people. But you can't hide from the electorate. And neither can Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, Labour, Social Democrats, the whole lot of you. And you got your answer last week, they're waiting in the long grass for you because they're sick, sore and tardy, because you have a dislike of the Irish people. And you seem to have a hatred for the Irish people who elect you in here and who pay your wages, the taxpayers. But they're waiting for you. You have that, and they're waiting for you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me, I'm speaking.
Absolute disgrace.
We never interrupted you when you were speaking.
What do you mean by that? You're waiting in the long grass for us.
John Corlett, is it possible to speak here in the Dáil or not?
And it's migrant men you say
we should be
afraid of?
Or you want to dictate what happens in the Dáil?
Shame to yourselves.
Right, Jennifer Whitmore of the Social Democrats, they're saying that the independent TDs ought to be ashamed of themselves. We heard from Matty McGrath, and you could also hear from Richard O'Donoghue there. Let's speak to Social Democrat TD for Dublin Central, Gary Gannon, who's on the line. A very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us on the programme. I found that aspect of the debate to be particularly disturbing to listen to in our national parliament. When Matty McGrath said that we're waiting in the long grass for you, who do you think he was speaking for?
Honestly, I'm not sure who he was speaking for, but we also have to remember the environment in which we're all operating in political circles at the minute, where we're attending public meetings, we're being, we've had people following us with camera phones, we're being shouted at, screamed at, where we're traitors. We're a tiny, tiny minority of people, but it's a very hostile environment we're operating in. And my Matty was telling female members of the Dáil that people are waiting in the long grass for them. That's absolutely not acceptable. It's not even close to being acceptable, which did rightfully increase tensions amongst the debate. But I suppose the debate for me was more about the treatment of people here who were seeking international protection. That's what we brought to the Dáil. We wanted to hold the government's feet to the fire about the lowering of standards. But there was a cohort of people in the Dáil yesterday that simply wanted to spread a far more hateful message, and referencing Holy Week just before they did it, I thought was particularly unbecoming. You know, I think particularly many of this week or so, my own mother and father will be sending masses to consider themselves good Christians, and the fact that Matty used that reference and then went into denigrate not only migrant communities, migrant people come here, but also ourselves. He also used other phrases like the loony left, and it's really unbecoming. Like, and I don't think we should just allow that to seep into our national parliament without it being challenged.
Is it allowed?
Cian Corlett was there, and in fairness to Cian Corlett, did make an intervention at the end of the debate, but I really think we shouldn't just accept this as par for the course. There wasn't any real sense of like calling Matty up. I think Deputy John Collins came in afterwards and referenced the fact that Matty had used the phrase "and I'm waiting in the long grass." He told people that we hate Ireland. It's just really, it's a bit sad. Like, it's, I don't think anybody wants to see that. Like, admittedly, Dáil should be the place where we have robust debate. Sometimes there can be a degree of heckling because tensions are so high. But I mean, when you overstep the mark like that, I mean, you have to be called up upon it.
Nobody was happy, it has to be said, about what happened over the St. Patrick's weekend.
No, far from being unhappy. I think it was just absolutely sad. It was a sad reflection of our republic. Dude, look, the conditions on Mount Street were absolutely no way acceptable. The fact that they were allowed to continue for almost a year, like, this didn't happen in isolation. That tent encampment has been there. It's probably since about April. No toilet facilities, no access to sanitation. I mean, it was cruel in and of itself. But then 120 or so people that were there, predominantly men, as you said, actually mostly men, they were met on just before Friday, Thursday, late Thursday into Friday. They were told they were going to somewhere better. But you're given no information. I mean, these are people who, many of them, don't speak English. They were corralled onto a bus. They were brought up to the foothills of the mountains. And then when they got off, they were put into what is effectively tents and tarpaulin, and into a place that had previously been burnt down by, I mean, so-called far right, but I don't even want to give them that title, give them too much legitimacy, hateful people. And this was the place that we were put in. The toilets hadn't yet been opened. So I think there's about 6 or 7 toilets on there. I mean, there's about the number of them yesterday, which is increasingly just even more sad. Yeah. But the toilet facilities to have at that moment, they were disgusting. There wasn't food on site. You were just confused, really, really, really confused. And then to add to that, there was nobody there to help. All the ministers had gone away for St. Patrick's weekend, and look, that's fine. But if you're in charge of this, don't head off on a head away while there's 130 human beings being placed into such kind of unsuitable, but then absence of communication, absence of any kind of cohesive management, bank holiday weekend. So I'm not sure if the guards were made aware in advance. You had a situation where some started walking back from the foothill to the Double Mountains back into the city centre, not knowing the direction, having no knowledge of bus routes, let alone if you had the cash to pay for them.
19 kilometres, was it?
Yeah, 19 kilometres. I know. It's just, I mean, who are we when we allow that to happen? And look, then we have a scenario where there was accusations of misinformation about whether there was 1 toilet or 6 toilets.
Yeah.
It was just.
I was speaking to Lucky Cambulay of Massey during the week, and he was saying that there's 6 toilets and 4 showers, or the other way around, but certainly nowhere near what would be needed for 130 people.
No, absolutely not. Like, and then that's the thing. It's like, we are talking about human beings here. They come here, they have every right to apply for international protection. As to when their application is being processed or not, they have a right to be treated with dignity while they're here. And they were really failing in those very, very basic standards. I think at the moment there's over 1,300 people who haven't been given, sought international protection here, haven't been given accommodation. We don't know where the majority of them are. We're not keeping track. One of the phrases I used this in the Dáil yesterday was almost state-sponsored hardship as a form of deterrent. Look, I don't think that's who the Irish people ever want us to be.
No. And I don't think the Irish people want us to brush our shameful response under the carpet either. And I don't think anybody could stand over the conditions that refugees are in on Mount Street or in Crookslane for that matter. But the minister says that it wasn't a case of brushing it under the carpet, and that the move coincided with the St. Patrick's Day celebrations. We can hear just a little bit of what Roderick O'Gorman had to say about that.
The suggestion that the move to Crookslane was in any way linked to St. Patrick's Day is entirely wrong. The additional facilities at Crookslane became operational last Saturday. As soon as the site was ready to receive international protection applicants, I sought to have them moved there. Basic as it is, the availability of toilets, of showers, of regular meals, of access to health and other services in a secure and protected location is a far better one than the one that exists on Mount Street.
I don't know. It was some coincidence. I think that's probably one way of putting it when it comes to the timing of it. But do you think that the minister is correct in suggesting that Crookslane, whilst it may not be ideal, is better than Mount Street?
everywhere. I think Camden, I'd imagine most places are better than Mount Street. I mean, Mount Street, Sandwich Street, just off Mount Street, where a lot of the other asylum seekers are, I mean, that was burnt last May by some, again, I'm refusing to use the phrase far right, but some hateful people anyway. Nobody's being brought to court for that. I can imagine most places are better than Mount Street, but that shouldn't be the standard. Mm. If the minister is going to make that decision coincidentally and not around St. Patrick's Day, surely he should be around to stand over it. It shouldn't be a case that when we're seeking information from the minister or for the minister of the state that they're away in Japan. If I was about to make a decision like that in relation to people's lives, in relation to a fear that would be given to confusion of people who are already fairly vulnerable, I mean, I'd stay around to stand over it. Be there to ensure the processing happened effectively, the management was done with dignity, that we had all the systems in place, like language support, healthcare support, that the toilets, whether that be one or six, were cleaned in advance, that people were met with food, that the guards were on standby so that there wasn't kind of the harassment that we've seen, that if there was transportation being offered, the men knew in advance where they were going, who they were getting into. Like, you were literally, the people in Mount Street were told that they were going to a better place. It was literally what they were told. You know, if I was living on a tent in the middle of the city centre and I was told I was going to a better place, and I arrived at the foothills of the mountain,
oh, you jump at it. Yeah, of course. So if you jump at it, and with good reason. And there's more than one reason why people shouldn't be sleeping in tents on Mount Street. And that was highlighted by Dr. Ralph Hurley. You mentioned Dr. Ralph Hurley O'Dwyer. He's a doctor in infectious diseases said the matter. He wrote to the Irish Times, and you mentioned Dr. Hurley O'Dwyer in the Dáil yesterday as well.
Yeah, I didn't only mention it was actually very specifically wrote into our motion, the comments of Dr. Hurley O'Dwyer, who said that infectious diseases were rampant. That was actually in their motion. That was in the motion that the government didn't deny. I mean, that's where we're living through. Well, actually, what I also mentioned yesterday, look, I think bringing a motion, one of the things we were also asking about was the reception centres. Your listeners might be aware that in 2021, Catherine Day's report suggested that we should build 6 reception centres to deal with the direct provision as it was then. Because of the war in Ukraine and the increase in numbers of migrants coming here from Ukraine and elsewhere, that was updated in 2023 to say that we should have 3 reception centres built by the end of 2023 and another 3 by the end of 2024. What I find absolutely ghastly is that, firstly, these reception centres haven't emerged yet. I mean, that's gross failure. But then there's also reports that the reception centres are being held off until such time as after the local and European elections. Now, if that is the case, we find that grotesque. I mean, oftentimes we'll debate policy, taxation, fine, that's what Parliament is about. But the idea that people's lives are being essentially worsened because of an election is horrendous. But then we're seeing that everywhere. So you would have scenarios like we're seeing in the D Hotel, for example, where a number of migrants have been placed in the D Hotel, and that created all sorts of conversation and debate. But none of us want to see those type of accommodation. What I would love to see is state-sponsored reception centres where the state steps in to provide the accommodation, to provide, most importantly, the care for the people within those reception centres as their applications are being processed. That's just a fair and decent way of doing it. But for some reason, we still see hotels, hostels, building these makeshift accommodation centres where private industry is once again stepping in. And it's just a really, really poor reflection of who we are and a poor way to treat people.
Well, refugees are a license to print money for some people. You mentioned the D Hotel, for example. It's a hotel that was sold, we understand, a year ago or so for €11 million. And by all accounts, the contract that the hotel now has with the department will be worth €25 million over the course of 2 years. And of course, it still remains the owner of the building. You talk about money and Dr. Ralph Hurley O'Dwyer. And in his letter to the Irish Times, he didn't just talk about the infectious diseases and the serious medical conditions that people were suffering as a result of sleeping outside. He also spoke about the cost of treating those people. And he said, never mind our moral duty to help these vulnerable people in need, there's a fiscal imperative to find a solution to this crisis.
Without question, Michael, one of the things we've always done hideously well in this country is monetize other people's vulnerability and their oppression. We've seen that in throughout our histories, be that in Michael Laundries, mother and baby homes, and now we're seeing it in the manner in which we're treating migrants. Rather than the state taking responsibility, building the infrastructure, providing the care under such time as applications are processed, we're handing that responsibility over to private industry, who by their very nature simply want to make a profit, turn a book, and it's to the cost of the state. We have a moral responsibility, an ethical responsibility, a fiscal responsibility, a legal responsibility. We're failing in all of those things. And what's even more horrendous is there doesn't seem to be any collective cabinet responsibility for this. Like Roderick O'Gorman's name is rightfully highly attached to this issue. But I mean, his cabinet colleagues seem hell-bent on sitting back and letting him and Minister for State Joe O'Brien, both Green Party ministers, take sole responsibility for this. And it shouldn't be that way. Okay. I mean, where is Dara O'Brien? This is an accommodation crisis. Yep. And Dara O'Brien has been absolutely nowhere near the issue, purposely, it has to be said.
All right, we'll leave it on that note. Thanks very much, Gary, for joining us on the programme today. Gary Gannon, Social Democrat TD for Dublin Central.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Okay, thanks to John texting us saying we all know what waiting in the long grass means. He reckons it means when elections come around. Thanks for that, John. Somebody else saying most people don't want another unelected leader to put the country into a further mess. They need to call for a general election to save whatever integrity Fine Gael has. Give the people what they want. Why do they want to block the people's democratic rights once again? Again and again, actually, is what our caller says. Tom in touch saying the reason that there is a toxic atmosphere around politicians lies with the politicians. It's their fault. Good politicians are applauded. Bad politicians call citizens names and then resign. Somebody else wondering about Helen McEntee, I think, who had a good relationship with the Taoiseach, and will that continue with the next Taoiseach? Somebody else then texting saying, "Hi Michael, could you let the young prince, future king, for a day, know that his subjects are waiting en masse for just one announcement, the date of the general election?" Thank you indeed. I take it our caller is referring to Simon Harris.
Making sure that, and I've said this thousands of times, just not as many of you are listening then, I said it a thousand times across the country, that no matter who you are, where you come from, what your mother or father did before you, I want everyone in this country to be able to reach their full potential. And that's the approach I want to take.
Because I guess okay. Neil Barker would have described himself back in the day as a Thatcherite. You wouldn't describe yourself as a Thatcherite.
I would not.
Laura.
I'm sorry, Helen, very final question. And is the hate speech bill still going ahead? We haven't heard anything about it for a while.
I've been working on that, as you know. I've been looking at ways in which I can address some of the concerns that people have raised with me directly, and that's what I'm doing.
Laura, and then over to Harry.
Have you made any decisions in terms of any upcoming cabinet reshuffles, and are any of your cabinet colleagues in bother? Should they be concerned, and is Simon Coveney vulnerable?
So I'm not the leader of Fine Gael today, so sorry about this, but there's a contest for the leadership of Fine Gael. Nominations are still open. And when that process closes, our party will make an announcement as to who the next leader of Fine Gael is, should it be me. I'm really looking forward to serving. If there isn't a contest, as is the working assumption, that will provide the new leader of Fine Gael with a period of space between becoming the leader of Fine Gael and then ultimately seeking to put together a government in Dáil Éireann and ask Dáil Éireann for a mandate. And that would be, I think, a very important period of time.
But you surely must be thinking about who your team will be.
I think about lots of things. We have a very talented parliamentary party, and I'm really looking forward to having the opportunity to showcase those talents in the coming days and weeks, but that's a matter for another day. I have great colleagues that I serve with every single day. Helen McEntee is a great colleague. I'm looking forward to asking everybody to step up and serve in the roles that are, in my view, best suited to their talents and their ability to deliver, should I have the opportunity to serve.
Okay, Harry, and then we go to Kate.
Yeah, no, you spoke last night about renewal and about reconnecting to the party, and it's a follow-on really from what Laura has asked. I mean, surely an aid to that must be a commitment to bringing new faces, fresh faces to the cabinet table, perhaps to the junior ministerial ranks as well. I mean, people, when they talk about renewal, also expect to see new personalities emerge and come to the fore in the party.
So look, sometimes in politics there's too much of an obsession with individuals. This presidential style of politics, I don't like it actually. I think politics is about getting the people's business done. When I talk about renewal, I talk about getting out there and listening to people. I talk about Fine Gael tearing back to its core values. I talk about stopping them. Why did people vote Fine Gael in the last election? What do they want us to get done? And what realistically can we get done between now and the end of this government, respecting fully the programme for government? I'm not the leader of Fine Gael. There's a process to go through. There'll be plenty of time and no doubt plenty of speculation in relation to issues that may flow from that. It is a statement of fact that there is a vacancy in the cabinet following, or certainly will be a vacancy in the cabinet following the Taoiseach's decision to step down. Right now my priority is to become the leader of Fine Gael, to listen to my colleagues, and if given the honour of serving as leader of Fine Gael, to use the period of time, the brief period of time that I would potentially have between being leader of Fine Gael and potentially leading a government in this country, to consider all of that.
Okay.
Minister Simon Harris speaking to reporters this morning, including Ruth O'Connell of LMFM. We'll pull out of that press conference for now because our time is running out on us once again. Thanks for listening as always. Thanks to Maggie McGuire who researched today. Chris Murray was in the control tower. Now I'm Michael and God willing we'll see you for our next programme on Monday morning at 9 a.m. right here on LMFM. Good morning. Bye-bye.
The Michael Reid Show podcast. Tune in weekdays from 9 on LMFM. To contact us, email now michael@lmfm.ie.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.